Go follow our TikTok page to enjoy additional History of North America content, including original, short, 60-second capsules. Welcome to the History of North America. I'm Mark Vinette. Martin Frobisher was an Elizabethan seaman, adventurer, and explorer who made three voyages to the New World looking for the Northwest Passage to India. As an English privateer, he plundered riches from French ships. He was later knighted by the Queen for his service in repelling the Spanish Armada in 1588. Frobisher's 1576 voyage to northern Canada was the first well-documented contact between Europeans and Inuit, formerly known as Eskimo. Over the past half century, indigenous peoples in North America have had more of a voice in discussions of how they wish to be referred, pressing for the elimination of terms widely considered to be obsolete or inaccurate. Some new terms have become widespread, but only partially accepted by indigenous groups themselves. Other naming conventions have been proposed and used, but none are accepted by all native groups. Typically, each name has a particular audience and political or cultural connotation, and regional usage varies. Although use of the term Eskimo has greatly declined in North America, it is still used by some to encompass the Inuit, as well as other indigenous Alaskan and Siberian peoples. Now, let's listen to the fascinating story of Sir Martin Frobisher, generously made available by LibriVox.
Hardly had it been learned that Columbus was mistaken in his belief, and that the shores he had discovered were not those of India and Cathay, when vigorous efforts began to find some easy route to the rich lands of the Orient. Balboa, in 1513, crossed the continent at its narrow neck, and gazed with astounded eyes upon the mighty ocean that lay beyond, the world's greatest sea. Magellan, in 1520, sailed round the continent at its southern extremity, and turned his daring prows into that world of waters of seemingly illimitable width. But the route thus laid out was far too long for the feeble commerce of that early day, and various efforts were made to pass the line of the continent at some northern point. The great rivers of North America, the James, the Hudson, and others, were explored in the eager hope that they might prove to be liquid canals between the two great seas. But a more promising hope was that which hinted that America might be circumnavigated at the north as well as at the south, and the Pacific be reached by way of the icy channel of the North Seas. Much of the most thrilling literature of adventure of the 19th century comes from the persistent efforts to traverse these perilous Arctic Ocean wastes. Let us go back to the oldest of the daring navigators of this frozen sea, the worthy knight Sir Martin Frobisher, and tell the story of his notable efforts to discover a Northwest Passage, the only thing left undone, as he quaintly says, whereby a notable mind might become famous and fortunate. An effort had been made to discover a Northwest Passage to the Pacific as early as 1527, and another 9 years later, but these were feeble attempts, which ended in failure and disaster, and discovered nothing worthy of record. It was in 1576 that Frobisher, one of the most renowned navigators of his day, put into effect the project he had cherished from his youth upward, and for which he had sought aid during 15 weary years, that of endeavoring to solve the ice-locked secret of the Arctic seas. The fleet with which this daring adventure was undertaken was a strangely insignificant one, consisting of three vessels which were even less in size than those with which Columbus had ventured on his great voyage. Two of these were but of 20 tons burden each, and the third only of 10, while the aggregate crews numbered but 35 men. With this tiny squadron, less in size than a trio of fishing smacks, the daring adventure set out to traverse the northern seas and face the waves of the great Pacific, if fortune should open to him its gates. On the 11th of July, 1576, the southern extremity of Greenland was sighted. It presented a more icy aspect than that which the Norsemen had seen nearly 6 centuries before. Sailing thence westward, the land of the continent came into view, and for the first time by modern Europeans was seen that strange race, then so well known under the name of Eskimo. The characteristics of this people and the conditions of their life are plainly described. The captain went on shore and was encountered with mighty deer, which ran at him with danger of his life. Here he had sight of the natives, which rowed to his ship in boats of seal skins, with a keel of wood within them. They ate raw flesh and fish, or rather devoured the same. They had long black hair, tawny of color, broad faces, His first voyage went not beyond this point. He returned home having lost 5 of his men, who were carried off by the natives. But he brought with him that which was sure to pave the way to future voyages. This was a piece of glittering stone, which the ignorant goldsmiths of London confidently declared to be ore of gold. Frobisher's first voyage had been delayed by the great difficulty in obtaining aid. For his new project, assistance was freely offered, Queen Elizabeth herself, moved by hope of treasure, coming to his help with 180-ton craft, the Aid, to which 2 smaller vessels were added. These being provisioned and manned, the bold navigator, with a merry wind in his sails, set out again for the desolate north. His first discovery here was of the strait now known by his name, up which he passed in a boat, with the mistaken notion in his mind that the land bounding the strait to the south was America, and that to the north was Asia.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-218-6010. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-218-6010. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-218-6010.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
The natives proved friendly, but Frobisher soon succeeded in making them hostile. He seized some of them and attempted to drag them to his boat, that he might conciliate them by presents. The natives, however, did not approve of this forcible method of conciliation, and the unwise knight reached the boat alone, with an arrow in his leg. But to their great joy, the mariners found plenty of the shining yellow stones, and stowed abundance of them on their ships, deeming that their fortunes were now surely made. They found also a great dead fish, round like a porpoise, 12 feet long, having a horn of 2 yards, lacking 2 inches, growing out of the snout, wreathed and straight like a wax taper, and might be thought to be a sea unicorn. It was reserved as a jewel by the Queen's commandment in her wardrobe of robes. A northwest wind having cleared the strait of ice, the navigators sailed forward, full of the belief that the Pacific would soon open to their eyes. It was not long before they were in a battle with the natives. They had found European articles in some native kayaks, which they supposed belonged to the men they had lost the year before. To rescue or revenge these unfortunates, Frobisher attacked the natives, who valiantly resisted, even plucking the arrows from their bodies to use as missiles, and when mortally hurt, flinging themselves from the rocks into the sea. At length they gave ground and fled to the loftier cliffs, leaving 2 of their women as trophies to the assailants. These 2, one being old, the other encumbered with a young child. This was not the last of their encounters with the natives, who, incensed against them, made every effort to entrap them into their power. Their stratagems consisted in placing tempting pieces of meat at points near which they lay in ambush, and in pretending lameness to decoy the Englishmen into pursuit. These schemes failing, they made a furious assault upon the vessel with arrows and other missiles. Before the strait could be fully traversed, ice had formed so thickly that further progress was stopped, and leaving the hoped-for Cathay for future voyagers, the mariners turned their prows homeward, their vessels laden with 200 tons of the glittering stone. Strangely enough, an examination of this material failed to dispel the delusion. The scientists of that day declared that it was genuine gold ore, and expressed their belief that the road to China lay through Frobisher Strait. Untold wealth, far surpassing that which the Spaniards had obtained in Mexico and Peru, seemed ready to shower into England's coffers. Frobisher was now given the proud honor of kissing the Queen's hand. His neck was encircled with a chain of gold of more value than his entire 200 tons of ore, and with a fleet of 15 ships, one of them of 400 tons, he set sail again for the land of the Golden Promise. Of the things that happened to him in this voyage, one of the most curious is thus related. The Salamander, one of their ships, being under both her courses and bonnets, happened to strike upon a great whale, with her full stem, with such a blow that the ship stood still, and neither stirred backward or forward. The whale thereat made a great and hideous noise, and casting up his body and tail, presently sank under water. Within 2 days they found a whale dead, which they supposed was this which the salamander had stricken. Other peril came to the fleet from icebergs, through the midst of which they were driven by a tempest, but they finally made their way into what is now known as Hudson Strait, up to which, filled with hope that the continental limits would quickly be passed and the route to China open before them, they sailed some 60 miles. But to their disappointment they found that they were being turned southward, and instead of crossing the continent were descending into its heart. Reluctantly Frobisher turned back, and after many buffetings from the storms, managed to bring part of his fleet into Frobisher Bay. So much time had been lost that it was not safe to proceed. Winter might surprise them in those icy wilds. Therefore, shipping immense quantities of the fool's gold which had led them so sadly astray, they turned their prows once more homeward, reaching England's shores in early October. Meanwhile, the ore had been found to be absolutely worthless, the golden dreams which had roused England to exultation had faded away, and the new shiploads they brought were esteemed to be hardly worth their weight as ballast. For this disappointment, the unlucky Frobisher, who had been appointed High Admiral of all lands and waters which he might discover, could not be held to blame. It was not he that had pronounced the worthless pyrites gold, and he had but obeyed orders in bringing new cargoes of this useless rubbish to add to the weight of Albion's rock-bound shores. But he could not obtain aid for a new voyage to the icy north. England for the time had lost all interest in that unpromising region, and Frobisher was forced to employ, in other directions, his skill in seamanship. With the after-career of this unsuccessful searcher for the Northwest Passage, we have no concern. It will suffice to say that fortune attended his later ventures upon the seas, and that he died in 1594 from a wound he received in a naval battle off the coast of France.
Frobisher Bay is an inlet of the Davis Strait in the largest and northernmost territory of Canada, Nunavut. It's located in the southeastern corner of Baffin Island and outlet into the Labrador Sea. The capital of Nunavut, Iqaluit, known as the village of Frobisher Bay from 1942 to 87, lies near the innermost end of the bay. Check out the YouTube version of this episode, which has accompanying images. I'm Mark Vinette, and I hope you're enjoying the ride. The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art, inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.